Hello and welcome to Borked, the podcast by geeks for geeks. I am your host, David Eagle. I have with me my co-hosts, Jay.
What's up?
And Rev.
Hello.
And you decided to say hello this week. That's so nice. And we've got a great show lined up for you, as always. I know I always say that, and I know it's always true, so prepare to be amazed. First, I want to talk about what we did this week, and I will start. Any of you who follow me on Twitter will know that my wife just completely owned her iPhone. And if you go to my Twitter account, or if you look in the show notes, I will post the picture of the owned iPhone. It has cracks all up the screen. It has cracks in the bottom. It's just a mess.
Yeah, what did she do?
She dropped it on the driveway. So after she dropped it, she called me and she was like, I dropped my phone. I'm really sorry. It's totally broken. And then I said, you know, obviously don't worry about it. But later, we were over at Jay's parents' house hanging out.
True story.
That was the same day. And your Fage was barbecuing for us, which was great.
Oh, what was
amazing.
He barbecuing? I don't know.
Steak.
Oh, he's so good at making steak.
I think he got like, there's like choice and prime. I don't know which is better. He got the better one at Costco. At Costco, of course.
He does do that.
So he did that, and your mom made some delicious pasta with this weird green vegetable that was very good.
Kale?
No.
Really?
I'll have to find out.
Oh, rapini.
Rapini, yes. Yeah, really very good. Delicious. And I don't even know. A little olive oil and some Parmesan cheese grated on there. It was great.
That's incredible.
So we're over there, and my wife is telling them this story about how she drops her phone. And she's like, you know, so I said I was sorry, and I kind of laughed, because every time she says that she's sorry about something like that, I just feel bad myself. And I said, you know, you don't need to be sorry unless, did you throw it on the ground so you could get a new iPhone? And she said, no, it just fell out of my pocket. And I said, okay, well, then don't worry about it. So we bought her a new phone, and I had an interesting experience while we were shopping for a new phone. We went in there with the mindset that, you know, my wife has always said that she didn't need an iPhone, and it wasn't crucial, and she didn't use most of the functionality. So we went in there with the mindset of, hey, let's find a cheaper phone. She doesn't need to have an iPhone. We'll just find something that can take pictures and send them to friends, and that'll be good enough. So we went in there, and we started looking. And the way the price breakdown works, you've got, like, the $29 phones, the free phones, which nobody wants, right? No. The $29 phones, which are probably serviceable. Obviously, this is all with a 2-year contract, because you can't afford a cell phone without a 2-year contract. Mm-hmm. So there are the $29 phones that are serviceable. And then the next jump is the $59 to $79 bracket. So we were looking at the $29 and the $59 to $79 bracket, and none of them were good. And, you know, we tested out some of the features, and we looked at the phones, and it was just, you know, we weren't impressed. So the guy was like, okay, we'll take a look at this one. And he shows us this Samsung that had a touch screen, and it had a nice camera and a keyboard and stuff, and it was $99. And I was looking at it, and I was like, yeah, that would be a good phone. It's very serviceable. It has a good camera and all this stuff, and it's $99. But if I'm going to spend $99 on a phone, I'm going to buy the newly discounted iPhone 3G. So yep. We went through the whole store probably 3 times and looked at all the phones. And it finally, you know, what it comes down to is, unless you're getting a free phone or you're getting a $30 phone, if you're buying a cell phone right now and you're a consumer, you're buying an iPhone.
Yep.
So we bought my wife a new iPhone, which was a lot of fun. What else have I been doing this week that's kind of geeky? I've been watching Dexter, season 1.
Oh, I hear that's good.
It's fun. The character of Dexter is a lot of fun. So the premise is that he's a serial killer. As I'm sure most of our listeners know, but he preys on serial killers. So he only kills people who are evil, which is still wrong, but makes for a great show. He's just a very dry character, very funny. Very self-aware, and the way that he disposes of the bodies is fantastic. So, anyway, Dexter, season 1, very good, very fun. I'm trying to catch up on True Blood, and I think, Jay, you started watching that with your wife as well, right?
I did. Me and Daisy started watching that. We got the first disc from Netflix, and then she's like, do you want me to add the next one? I'm like, no, I think I'm just going to buy it, because I'm a vampire maniac. I love vampire stuff. Anything vampires, I'm in.
Right.
So, it's good.
Oh, Twilight?
Okay, if they can go in the sun, they're not vampires. Case closed.
True story.
So it is a good show, and Anna Paquin is, I think, really quirky, and I really enjoy quirky actresses. So I like that. That's probably why I like the Deschanel sisters, Zoe Deschanel, who was in the movie Yes Man, which we also watched this week.
I saw her in that Wizard of Oz thing they did. What was that? What was that called again?
The Wizard of Oz?
No,
it was called Tin Man.
Tin Man, that's right. The one
which
that was
is, it's $9.99 at Best Buy if you want to pick that up.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Is it good? Is it worth it? Because I hate The Wizard of Oz.
Definitely worth $10.
Oh, definitely. Like, I was going to pick it up, but I was buying like $100 worth of stuff at the time, so I
okay.
Didn't.
Well, yeah, that extra 1% or 10% is just killer. So she was in Yes Man, and she played a really quirky character, and I really enjoyed her in that, and I love her sister Emily in Bones. She's just amazing. So those are three quirky female characters who I enjoy in just about anything that they're in. And I actually wanted to talk about this too. In the movie Yes Man, Zooey Deschanel, this is a minor spoiler, but if you are a film geek or if you're a writing geek, you can watch the beginning of a movie and know a couple of things that are going to happen down the line. So this shouldn't be a big surprise to anyone. She's in a band that Jim Carrey goes to see sort of halfway through the movie. And the band is, it's a ridiculous, over-the-top, like, indie experience band. And it's hilarious, but it is exactly the kind of thing where after the movie, I was like, you know, if I could buy that band CD, they were the band was called Munchausen by Proxy. It was awesome. So Yes Man, very good movie, surprisingly much better than I thought it would be.
Really? You don't like Liar Liar 2?
No, it was really good. Jim Carrey was Jim Carrey. You know what to expect there, but the writing was pretty decent throughout. And he wasn't totally over the top. He was a point, but pretty good. So we watched a couple movies. We watched a couple TV shows. We bought my wife a new phone. I found out that the only phone to buy is the iPhone, and that was my week.
I'll go. But I need a second. Rev go.
You're horrible.
I am pretty bad. That's right. Dave will edit it out.
False.
You've been outed.
Oh, God.
I didn't do much interesting things, but I caught up on my D&D podcast, which I realized that if you skip the first set of podcasts, you won't get into the D&D that we're running right now.
Yeah, I've listened to the second storyline because I figured that was safe.
Yes, it's
for our listeners. We have a running D&D game because we are in fact geeks that we play about once every 7 or 8 months, and we're running through the same campaign that if you listen to the Dungeons and Dragons podcast, you'll know that the Penny Arcade guys, Mike Krahulik and Jerry Holkins, played Dungeons and Dragons with a Wizards of the Coast dungeon master who also is a developer of the game, and with the artist and writer of the PvP Online comic, Scott Kurtz. And they recorded the whole thing and provided it in podcast form, and it's hilarious. So you should give it a listen. It's not for kids, definite adult language in there, but it is so funny and very, very good to listen to. So we are doing the same campaign that they did in their first iteration, and Rev had been saying, hey, you know, don't listen to it because it'll ruin the storyline. So I've been avoiding it. But then they came out with the second series. It was actually a couple months ago, and I listened to that, and it was just fantastic. Will Wheaton was on that one as well. He was great. He is great all the time. So, sorry. Go ahead, Rev.
Oh, about Will Wheaton, it's kind of funny because Scott Kurtz and the Penny Arcade guys, they're just there, like, having fun. And it's funny to get Will Wheaton's kind of take on it, because he's always trying to like look out for the listeners. He's like, for the listeners, this and this and this is in the room, blah blah blah. It's kind of funny because it just brings out that he's like just a super like fan of Penny Arcade, and he wants everyone else to be in on it, which is interesting.
Yeah, it's great. And I think he adds, it's so funny when he comes in because he's like the new kid and they totally treat him like that. And it's just hilarious. I mean, the group dynamic that they have with those that specific, you know, set of guys is just great. So it's worth listening to.
Yep. Other than that, I just did a bunch of work. And then I messed around with sitting through your Twitter craft last week, I messed around with the WoW add-on API, and I've been playing with that. Hopefully I'll actually have something to show for it.
We're not going to talk about it because this is the episode entitled the one without Blizzard.
Yeah.
The Blizzardless podcast. So we're not going to talk about all that.
Don't say the word.
So Jay, what have you been up to this week?
This week, I can't mention Blizzard now, thanks. I played a game which wasn't anything to do with World of Warcraft.
Oh, Dawn of War 2?
Well, no, I did play that as well, and I want to talk about that briefly, but really quick, just my only thing I'm going to say about Blizzard at all this podcast is I've been leveling a Hunter, and he's in his low 70s, and it's been fun. That's all I'm going to say. He's great. Okay, I can't talk about it. Fine. Whatever. I was going to talk about Jorgen, but since we can't, I won't.
Save it for next week. It'll all still right. be fresh.
That's fine. It will be.
It won't be as fresh. Yeah. Right. Yes, the paint is still there.
You went to a Yelp event.
I did go to a Yelp event. That is really rad.
And I didn't know what Yelp was until you told me about it.
Which is really sad. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Randy hasn't told you about it, Dave.
I'm bad at the internet, apparently.
Yelp queen.
Yeah, she is, actually. She's the one who got Sarah into Yelp. It's funny, the thing that kind of got Sarah into it is, you know, she was talking with Randy and saying how we didn't know that many people up here right when we moved. And so she's like, well, the way I get to know a lot of people is through Yelp. And Sarah's like, oh, what's Yelp? And then she told her all about it. So she signed up for Yelp, and now my wife's been doing Yelp like constantly. Everywhere we go, she Yelps about it, which is kind of cool. I've done a review or two under her name.
In addition to being awesome at telling people about Yelp, Randy also hooked me up with tickets via her brother, who is a super highly placed artist for a game development studio, which we won't name. But she hooked me up with tickets to a convention that company throws every year or so in a little town called Anaheim. So big shout out to Randy, who is awesome and a friend of the show.
She's very cool. Yeah.
Oh,
bastard.
You should mention that Yelp, what Yelp is.
Oh, yeah. Yelp is basically, it's very Web 2.0. It's a site that where you can create a user account and submit reviews for anything, technically, but generally it's for restaurants and bars, that sort of thing, where you can give a rating of 1 to 5 stars and give a short little review. And it's cool because you can kind of search by the area near yourself and find out what's good, what's not, or what people enjoy and what they don't. Anyways.
You described it to me as Zagat for real people.
Yes. No, it's Zagat for the web generation. That's exactly what it is. And it's very, very cool. One of the neater features about it is that as you continue to do reviews, you can eventually become what's called Yelp Elite. And Sarah, my wife, just got Yelp Elite last week, so it's kind of cool. And that's basically what happens is you have somebody who's already an elite or a higher up in Yelp will contact you and say, you know, we see you've been doing a lot of reviews, would you like to become Yelp Elite, that sort of thing. And when you're Yelp Elite, you get invites to all sorts of exclusive events at different places in your area. And all that, I think, depends on how involved the community manager for your region is. Now, Seattle is pretty active in terms of Yelp. So up here, she's there's all kinds of stuff going on. On Wednesday, there's an event at a gourmet cupcake shop where they're closing it down to everyone, and it's just Yelp Elite who are going to be there, and they get to make their own special cupcakes. I don't know, whatever. It's cool. I think I'm going. Maybe I'm not going. I don't know, but my wife is going for sure. And so Yelp is kind of cool. And anyways, we were at this event today called the Seattle Chocolate Salon or something like that. It was basically just a conference center full of chocolatiers. And I don't like chocolate that much, so it was kind of, whatever. But there was some definitely good chocolate there, and my wife was in chocolate heaven, which is good, allegedly.
And I like that you were live tweeting the different the chocolate experience, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, I figured it'd be fun, because I wasn't that much into it, so I had my iPhone out, flipping through it, and saying stuff. And then we saw people carrying around Yelp bags, so I was like, maybe Yelp is here. She's like, oh my God. And she was signing up for some gourmet company's newsletter, and she saw the person above her on that thing was the community manager for Yelp for all of Seattle. So she kind of had a little nerd moment, and we looked over at the Yelp booth, and then there was the community manager for all of Seattle. So it was kind of cool. She got to meet the community manager and talk about the cupcake event that's happening on Wednesday. So Yelp is kind of neat. If you're good at it and you do it a lot, then you can get free stuff, which is always fun.
But you have to review.
Yeah, you do have to review and do it often. But it's not that hard to do, and it's kind of fun too. They have a lot of community stuff built into the site. It's very Web 2.0. And that's the last thing I'll say about Yelp. And really briefly, I want to talk about Dawn of War 2, which I know I'm a little late on this bandwagon, but pretty awesome. I only have one complaint, and it's huge. And the complaint is directed entirely at Microsoft. I have an Xbox 360 that when I'm playing computer games, my wife generally watches movies streaming over Netflix, because if you have the Netflix dealy-hooly for Xbox 360, you can watch anything that's on play instantly over your your Xbox through your TV. So she watches horrible movies all the time.
That's almost true.
Oh, whatever.
You have to have Netflix and you have to have an Xbox Live
Gold
account.
Doesn't have Gold, and who doesn't have Netflix? Come on.
Nobody listening to this podcast.
That's what I'm saying. So she likes to watch movies on there all the time. So I go to log into Dawn of War 2, and of course it requires gaming with Windows Live. So I log into my Live account, which is the same as my 360 account, and she gets kicked out of her movie. So she just figures, oh, that's weird. I'll start watching the movie again. She kicks me out of the game. And so I cannot play Dawn of War 2 multiplayer at the same time I'm logged into my Xbox.
How much does it cost to set up a Windows Live account?
It's not that. Like, if he won't get his – okay, this is totally, like, petty.
He won't get his achievement points.
Yeah, he won't get his achievements to his main gamer profile, which is really annoying for people like us.
Yeah.
All right. Not something I care about.
I'm pretty sure that you bind your CD key to your Live account. Is that true, John?
I really don't know. I know that when Fallout 3 came out, it came with its own Live key. So I almost want to say that you might be able to make another account to play multiplayer separately. But I'm not sure. You'd have to try it.
The fact that I'd even have to is
Yeah, that's been the major complaint for Dawn of War 2, in that you have to use Live. And at the beginning, there was all these sign-on problems and all these issues. It was really frustrating for a lot of the users and people. There was a huge outcry because this is the first time that Live was integrated into a Relic game. And they went the next step and used Windows Live for their matchmaking service instead of using the matchmaking service that they use for Company of Heroes, which I don't know about you, but it's been great.
It was fine.
No complaints, yeah. And so I don't know what the reasoning was there, but hopefully one can only hope that they learned their lesson and or Microsoft will learn their lesson. I mean, maybe this is something that I don't know. Maybe there's like a site out there that has like some crappy petition, or we can call in and complain. But it's really retarded that, because the Live on your computer, for it to restrict only one login is stupid, because you're not getting any benefit. Like, there's no reason to pay for Gold on the PC at this time, and so it's not like they're locking you out of any special features. So.
Well, yeah, and just as a side point, last year at PAX, which is the Penny Arcade Expo, which, Dave, you need to come to. Like, I'm tired of waiting.
I really want to.
Well, I don't. That's useless information.
Well, we'll talk more about that next week.
Really? Next week?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So, last year they. Your mic is. There are crickets.
Yeah. Dave. By the way, for all of our listeners. I'm podcasting in my backyard, and you know what? I'm going to be honest with you guys. I am smoking a stogie, and I'm in my backyard, and there's some ambient lights on the neighbor's tree, and I've got my laptop out here, and there are some dogs going on, and there's a cricket over on my right, and you guys are just going to have to deal with that in the podcast, because it is amazing out here. It's about 78 degrees. The sun has set. This is what California is for.
That is the only thing that California is good for, as far as I'm concerned.
So I'm going to try to keep my mic muted. If you hear any clicking sounds in between me talking, that's going to be me muting my mic, but I'm definitely not going to go inside, so you guys are just going to have to deal with it. I apologize.
I'm sure they're fine, but
all right, so you were saying PAX.
Yeah, at PAX last year, they were talking, they were doing the demo for Dawn of Wars. The Relic guys had a little, like a community thing where the developers were talking about the game and showing some gameplay footage, and then they had a Q&A at the end, and I'm not kidding when I say that there were probably 6 or 7 people who got to ask a question. I would say 5 of them said that it's retarded that they chose Windows Live over Steam or over their own matchmaking. Literally, 5 out of 7 people said,
wow.
I think it's a really horrible idea that you're using Windows Live, but I'm still really excited to play the game. And the fact that they didn't get it from that was shocking.
At that point, they couldn't change it, so I guess we'll just have to hope that their next game doesn't use it. Like, I'm fine. Like, having the achievements was cool for like Fallout 3, and it's cool for Dawn of War 2, but to use that system where, and I haven't experienced your problem where it was logging you off, and I know that's going to happen to me in the future, and it just makes me, like, not want to play the game, you know, because we played that all the time, and my wife as well watches movies on Netflix streaming all the time, so it's really frustrating.
Which, by the way, after you've watched about 10 movies on Netflix streaming, all you're watching are terrible movies.
That's not actually true, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, shall we move on to the Geekly News?
Yeah, we should probably.
All right, let's jam. Let's boogie. Geekly News. The first item I want to talk about is from, well, all sorts of places. I found it on Ars Technica because I'm a huge fan of Ars Technica. If you don't read Ars Technica, you should. It can be a little overwhelming. They update a lot. But you can go in and you can add certain categories to your RSS, which solves all your problems. But what this story boils down to is that there are a couple of European newspaper companies that are putting forth an, I forget what it's called, it's like a memorandum or an initiative, but they're trying to get this thing put into law whereby they can force the police to force bloggers to stop stealing their news. So let's run it down. Oh, somebody's shooting off fireworks. All right, let's run it down. European newspapers consider themselves the source for all news, and they think that everybody should have access to news as long as everybody can pay for news. What they see is that bloggers take news and bloggers post news, but the newspapers, knowing that they are the only source for all news, consider that stealing. So they want the police to essentially to pursue bloggers, and they want lawyers to pursue bloggers who post news and make them pay some sort of dividend to the newspaper companies. I think it's ridiculous. I think that we all know that print media is failing, and if they don't find a new business model, they'll be out of business within the next decade.
Mm-hmm. Or 5 years.
All right, you're going for 5 years. I'm going to stick with decade. I've seen some changes that, you know, I think are beneficial and all that. But either way, the remedy for a failing business is not to seek government intervention.
Unless you're GM.
Unless what?
Unless you're GM.
Right, unless you're GM. Or Europe. Anything in Europe. So that was an interesting little news tidbit. I think it's interesting because obviously it affects our sphere. We see new media, which is, you know, bloggers and people on the internet in general, and websites like Gizmodo or Ars Technica that spread news. Oh, do you guys remember the Register? Register.co.uk?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's still around. I'm sure it is. Great news site as well. I haven't checked out in a while, but it used to be awesome. It used to be the site for just a really good spread of general technical news. But anyway, European newspapers right now, and probably American newspapers as well, are seeing these guys as a big threat. And the reason that it's a threat is they're providing information as a service instead of a product, and they're finding ways to monetize that service through ads and stuff like that, which newspapers just haven't caught on with. And I think the print industry really needs to figure out what they can do about that. And I know everybody says that. I know everybody knows that's the truth. And nobody has a better answer than that. But I think it's ridiculous to see them grasping at straws like this one is just comical. So you guys should check that article out. It's definitely worth reading. It's definitely interesting. Obviously, hopefully it won't go anywhere. I'm sure it won't because we live in a rational world, kind of. But yeah.
Unless you're in Europe. But the point is one of the big truths of the information revolution is that information wants to be free. And as long as news companies think about events as news and about events as, you know, a CNN exclusive or a, you know, a Fox 11 exclusive, as long as they see world events as something that they can put their logo on and distribute in a very small fashion to make the masses lock into and say, oh man, did you see that thing on Fox? It was only on Fox. It was a Fox exclusive. As long as they're doing that, as long as they see the world in those through those kind of shades, then they're never really going to understand the digital revolution as far as information wanting to be free. So,
and that's an interesting – I've heard that. I remember the originator of that, information wants to be free. And there's a really interesting article there was a book that just recently came out called Free, and it was about this kind of subject. I'll try to find it and link it in the show notes. Hopefully we can all read it and talk about it in a couple weeks. But it is based on the premise that information wants to be free and that all businesses should give away everything for free. So, and then there was a big hullabaloo because a lead editor for the New Yorker. Hullabaloo? I don't know what kind of baloo it was. Look, the only baloo I care about is the one from Tailspin.
Junk book?
Tailspin?
Both.
Both. It was both. The same dude. In one, he lived in the jungle. In the other one, he flew an awesome plane. What were we
talking
about?
That plane got shot at all the time, and it had no guns on it. I just didn't understand that.
Yeah, that's totally true. It did get shot at all the time.
All right. Let's move on to the next news item. The BlackBerry Tour goes on sale today. I've always said that the BlackBerry is the phone for business users, and I stick by that. And the Tour is the next, I think it was actually either today or yesterday that it went on sale, but the Tour is the next thing from BlackBerry. It's supposed to roll up all of the best features from their last couple of iterations of BlackBerry from the 8800 on, and just all the best stuff is supposed to be in the Tour. The price with the 2-year contract is $269, and it is available on Verizon. And if you're on Verizon, this is the phone that you should have, as far as I'm concerned. There's no reason to have any other phone. I don't think it has a camera because it's Verizon's business phone, and their business phones traditionally do not have cameras. If I'm wrong, I'm sure someone will tell me. But gosh, really just get this phone if you're on Verizon because it's great. And if you're not on Verizon, then you're on Singular and you should already have the iPhone unless you're a business user. And if you're on...
Can I dish on the
T-Mobile
BlackBerry real quick?
Then that sucks. Yeah, go for it. If you're on T-Mobile, If you're on T-Mobile, you have access to the BlackBerry flip phone and you should hate your life. So anyway, dish away.
My problem with the BlackBerry is they got one thing right, and that was push Gmail and everything else wrong, or push email and everything else wrong. And it just really frustrates me that because of that, because they were the first ones, they're like the business phone, and the only reason why they're the business phone is because they've been integrated in like so many companies across the world. It's just kind of really frustrating.
I don't know. I don't think it's very generous.
I don't
generous.
Like anything about the BlackBerry. Like,
I don't think it's very generous like to say that they got everything wrong. I had a BlackBerry 8800 for a couple of years, and I loved it. It was a great phone.
I hated all of them.
The battery life, it lasted for like 5 days, which was pretty darn decent with full normal usage. I mean, the browser isn't the greatest, but it's extreme. It's completely serviceable.
You keep saying that. Phrase
serviceable, yeah. Serviceable? You said service. We're gonna call this episode serviceable because you said it like 5 times.
Have I?
Yes,
all right.
Does
well,
that mean that you're calling up your hookers on it?
Ooh, yeah. Ouch. Well, I think the BlackBerry is a fine, fine telephone and also smart. Weak. You have nothing to say, that's all you got.
Weak.
BlackBerry's dumb.
All right, let's move on to the last news item that I have. You know, not a big news week, no big releases except for the BlackBerry Tour. What other options do Verizon users have right now that don't suck and aren't BlackBerries?
Switch.
Well, there is that. Yeah, more and more, the iPhone is the only phone that makes any sense, especially with the iPhone being priced at $100. I mean, come on.
I have a friend that works at Verizon, and they're just an insane dinosaur, and hearing the stories and learning about just their, I mean, the way a company does their own business is really indicative of how they're going to like provide you products and services, and to hear what they do like in sanctioned, never going to change kind of environments is just, it's insane. And so if you're in Verizon, they may have the biggest network, but...
Well, they're still on CDMA, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, that was just... That's not... After learning about the protocols, it's not that big of a deal other than they pay royalties on it. I mean, CDMA is a great network, but just, I don't know, just stuff that is, like, long and drawn out, but it's just... Verizon is kind of a dinosaur.
All right, fair enough. Well, yeah, I'm not a fan of them. Obviously, I'm a singular user since I have...
But who's a fan of any cell phone company? They're like the new cable companies. We all hate them.
Well, the thing about it is when their service is working, you don't notice. And when it's not working, it has a severe impact on your life. So,
well, I mean, things like AT&T being just vicious in their roaming charges for out of the United States.
Oh, yeah. That guy got charged like $11,000 for data roaming.
Well, so many people, like from the very beginning, people were getting charges for hundreds and thousands of dollars. And the best thing they did is if you call up and if you ask for the international roaming, you're fine. But if you don't know, you're screwed.
I can't wait for Jay to get his cell phone bill because I know...
I hate you.
You texted me from Canada.
Well, text isn't data, so you can text from...
The land of the frozen caribou.
Well, we texted from France and it was fine. We didn't get a single extra charge, so, but that was on T-Mobile.
T-Mo-Franc?
Okay. Yeah, over there it's called Orange, which is in English orange.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I never would have... guest. All right. There was a news story that I took out because it's really a non-story, but I think it's kind of funny, so I'm going to mention it. A Microsoft VP talking about Google OS said that Google's product development and Google's business moves are consistently defensive.
What the flies? Yeah. Does that even mean?
What does that even mean? Yeah, so I just thought that was funny. I wanted to throw that out there. If you're interested in that, it'll be in the show notes. It's not really worth talking about because when you read deeper into it, it is kind of a non-story, but it is also hilarious that, you know, he just blatantly said that in an interview. Well, Google is just defensive. So the last story that we have for you from the Geekly News section is this story about a teenage girl who walked into an open manhole cover.
That's really gross. Are we going to talk about this? What?
She was texting, and she walked into an open manhole cover, which is awesome. And she was fine, so we can totally make fun of her. She did lose a shoe in the sewer, I guess.
Oh, dang.
Oh,
and the best thing about
That's
this story,
horrible.
The best thing in the whole world, is that her mom says that she was scratched up and that she was also traumatized, and the family plans to sue.
I hope she was traumatized, so she won't walk while texting again.
Well, that's what the Gizmodo article, the writer of the Gizmodo article said. You know, who is she going to sue? Either the cell phone company, which is hilarious, or the city, which is hilarious, or herself for being stupid enough to walk into an open manhole cover. Like, is the family going to sue the daughter?
Sue the daughter.
So, I don't know. I just got a specific kind of joy from that story, but... Listeners of the Borked podcast, if you're listening to this podcast on your iPod right now and you're also texting a friend to tell them about Borked and how awesome it is,
just check your feet.
Check
just
it out. Look around you. Use your peripheral vision. Use the periffs. Make sure there's no open manhole covers. Or maybe just stay on the sidewalk. You know, that's an option too.
That's a safe.
That's
safe.
Where, in this day and age, that is where walking happens. So check it out. Sidewalks are your friend. Well, then let's move on to recommended reading. And this one is all about you, Rev, because it is your book and your author. So take it away.
You were talking about obscure fiction, and I hope this is obscure to some people. But David Farland, The Rune Lords, is a series with, I'm not sure how many books. But the first kind of series he did was three, I believe. It's kind of like your... run-of-the-mill, almost swords and sorcery. But what's interesting about it is they don't take on the normal magic where people just have some kind of magic and they wield it. The way that you get magic in the Rune Lords world is you pledge like your piety or something like that to an animal, and it endows you with its kind of like major, like either like brawn or wit or grace. So like you go to a gazelle and you ask for its grace via an endowment. It's kind of interesting, and it's been a while since I read the book, but it's definitely something that if you're looking for a fantasy book, I highly recommend.
All right. Well, that sounds awesome. I will definitely check it out because I haven't read it. I believe you've talked about it before, but it's been probably several years. You were saying that your friend Jacob read it, I think, maybe? Maybe not.
No, but that's okay.
Fair enough. I'll just edit that out.
Wrap up. All right.
I make
just said yep.
You were talking about a friend of yours that like is always trying new books or something. I don't know. Whatever. I distinctly remember the conversation.
No, you're right. But I'm afraid you don't want me to elaborate.
Fine. Then don't, sir. Do not. All right, moving right along. This is the we're moving into the central section of the podcast, the proverbial meat, and we have a couple of topics that we want to talk about. So we shouldn't spend too much time on any of them. But the first one I think is awesome, and it is a question, and I'm going to pose it to all of you.
Poser.
Do you accept your mom's Facebook request?
You made Jay cry.
Jay, your mom is on Facebook.
She is.
And she's awesome, too, as well.
Yeah. Well,
she's like one of my favorite people.
That's really the reason that I can say yes.
So it's based on the...
it's
not
based
the position
on the
of the mother, but the specific mother.
Mm-hmm.
All right, fair enough.
So.
And, well, I don't want to take it from that angle. So let's take it from a more general angle. What... Oh, not okay. Not okay, given context. Why would I want to accept my mom's Facebook? I think the deeper question here is, what is Facebook to you? Because if Facebook to you is an aggregator of relationships, then you're absolutely going to accept everybody's request, no matter who they are, no matter how surface level your connection with them. But if Facebook is something different, then maybe you wouldn't. So... that question kind of informs the answer. Rev, let's kick it over to you. What do you think about this whole debate? You brought it up, so.
Yeah, well, I think that the biggest thing is that people are, let's just say it, they're afraid their mom's going to judge them and then talk to them about it. I mean, that's the only reason to not add your mom on Facebook. It's kind of a shallow one because, I mean, if you want to live your life, then you live your life the way you want, and right. If your mom wants to know how you live it, you know, you should be a man or woman enough to tell her, you know, and deal with it.
I agree. That's awesome.
So
now in real life, what's the actual answer? Cause that was
in real life, you weigh the checks and balances, I guess.
Well, it's funny because I like what you said there, and you didn't say that you're afraid that your mom is going to judge how you live your life. The thing that you're afraid of is that your mom is going to first judge how you live your life and then want to talk to you about it. Because that's
sure
the real danger.
Mom judges my life. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know.
And she has evidence.
And for me, my mom, not only, I think my mom is a friend of mine on Facebook, but I really don't use Facebook. I'm bad at it and I don't like it. And that puts me in the minority, definitely, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with minorities of all kinds, and we'll talk about that later. but the thing for me is that my mom also gets to judge how I run my guild and how I run my raids. And I'm not going to talk about what game I have a guild in or what game I do raids in, but I'm just saying that kind of exposure can be a little frightening.
Galaxy.
Yes, Star Wars Galaxy, absolutely. It can be a little off-putting at first. But if your mom is cool, you'll be fine. And if your mom isn't cool, you're probably not going to return her call anyway, so you don't need to worry about it.
Your story.
Upcoming movies. We talked about Transformers 2. And Jay, I totally agree with your sentiment. Transformers 2 is not a geeky movie.
No, it's not. It is there's this guy, and he's all, oh, summer blockbuster. Let's make this movie where there are guys jumping around and dodging missiles and the Eiffel Tower gets eaten by green gas. This is totally badass. Oh, dude, we could totally make this G.I. Joe. Put an ninja in there.
Put a ninja in
there. That's literally what happened. They're like, right. Let's rename the bad guys Cobra and the good guys will be Joe.
Yeah, G.I. Joe totally follows with Transformers 2, where they're just really making an action movie and they're basing it on our childhood. So they're taking our nostalgia and they're
not
sullying
taking.
It.
Not taking, not sullying. They are raping.
Oh, that's a hard word.
But I'm going to use it.
All right. Fair enough. I don't want to talk about G.I. Joe. I think we all know it's going to be awful. I think we all have really, really fond memories of G.I. Joe. My favorite toys.
Mainly the PSAs.
Mainly the PSAs. Yeah. No, but I mean, my favorite toys when I was growing up were G.I. Joe toys. And we used to have this awesome coffee table that was made out of, like, driftwood or something with glass on top. So imagine Driftwood, and then imagine you're like 8 years old and you have a bunch of G.I. Joes. Yeah, take a minute. Okay. Go ahead. Just digest it. Just chew on it for a minute.
I'm imagining. Yeah.
It's good. It was awesome. So I have some really fond memories of G.I. Joe, and it's really disappointing to see them not making it into a good movie, but then I also really enjoyed Street Fighter, and look what they did to that. So.
Well. They're just keeping the tradition, I guess.
Right, exactly. Where Hollywood will find something that you liked when you were a kid and then destroy it.
And then make you watch the movie.
And then force you to watch the movie at gunpoint.
Well, I was listening to NPR the other day, and they were talking about the Transformers and the G.I. Joe and all these movies that are coming out that are based off of toys or cartoons. And they were talking about, was it Mattel or whoever makes the G.I. Joes and Transformers, about how they made the cartoons way back in the 80s as kind of like a 24-minute commercial with commercials in between. And it was kind of like that's what they did. It was widely known in the entertainment and toy industry is if you wanted to make a load of money on toys, make a cartoon about your toys. And so This is kind of an extension of that. And then NPR was talking about how they backpedaled and this and that. And we were like, well, we just want to make a good movie, but also sell a lot of toys.
That's sad. But then I think we saw the same thing in Star Wars episode 6.
And Spaceballs. Merchandising.
Merchandising. Yeah, because
Spaceballs the flamethrower.
In the original Star Wars script for Return of the Jedi, The moon of Endor that they used was going to be the home planet of the Wookiees. But you can't really sell Wookiee teddy bears.
Plus, they wanted to leave that for the prequel third movie.
Which they swore they would never make, incidentally.
And they shouldn't have.
And they shouldn't have. Agreed. So if you're feeling down again about Star Wars, go watch the Old Kingdom trailer. Anyway.
The Old Kingdom? What, like, in that Blizzard game?
No. No, not that
I think
old.
You mean the Old Republic.
The Old Republic. It's okay. I don't know. Kingdom, Republic. Words. So the really funny thing about the G.I. Joe movie is that we're not going to talk too much about it, but Stephen Sommers was the director, and he did the whole film, and then they showed it to a test audience, which they do. I'm sure they showed it to a couple test audiences, and it got the worst scores in history, and then Stephen Sommers got fired.
Good.
So that's awesome.
Because the trailer looks horrible.
Yes. Yeah, it really does. So anyway, that's that, and let's move on to the next one. Rev, take it. Rev,
all right.
Don't take it. Take nothing. Take a drink. What are you doing?
You caught me off guard, sir. Well, we've been talking about how we're so upset with like movies that are supposed to be geeky but aren't. And I was like, well, what's coming up? And we've got a few really interesting ones. Specifically, The Last Airbender, which is a cartoon in which I have never watched, but I hear is good in its own way of goodness and whatnot. Anyway, M. Night Shyamalan. Is that how you say his name?
Yep.
Yeah, that's how you say it. He's directing and doing all his Shyamalama Ding Dong stuff on this one. And it looks pretty good.
He's going to do a Shyamalan to it.
Yeah.
He's going to sham it. Sham wow.
That's great.
Other than that, we've got Avatar. James Cameron's like future sci-fi 3D movie. It's like specifically built like for 3D, which is interesting.
Stupid.
And there's you would think it's stupid, but there's this blog post on Slash Film about how like comments from critics that saw the first 24 minutes, and there's a couple comments. I'm gonna just read them off. Jaw dropping. Imagine that. And then one that is actually really interesting. Until now, 3D has been a gimmick. And that makes me kind of... And then also people talking about how if they had a time machine, they would go to December 28th just to see this movie. And it's going to be the movie of 2009 and all this jazz. But I'm kind of hopeful. You know, they're making a video game out of it, of course. I mean, what?
They're going to make an Avatar video game?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
it's craziness. Because I mean,
who would do that?
Who would make a video game out of a movie?
I know,
that's really weird.
That's like
really
the opposite world.
So that looks really promising. Hopefully, that will be great because I don't know. Like, I loved Star Trek, and I hear that Transformers is crappy, and I hear that Terminator was crappy, and I need another Star Trek. You know,
right?
I mean, it's only been a few months, but come on.
Totally. Well, what we need is we need a reason to see something in IMAX and / 3D.
Oh. So that pisses me off. Thank you. Appreciate bringing
Good
that
job
up.
Pissed him off.
I try.
Harry Potter comes out this Wednesday early morning.
Early Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah, and it is not showing in IMAX for 2 weeks because Transformers has all those screens.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst. That's the worst thing in the world. So I have a question. When the Harry Potter movie was filmed, was Hermione 18 yet?
That's a good question.
You are sick. You are dead on, but you are gross.
Well, I just want to know. All right.
It's my moral obligation to say that you're disgusting.
I will hold off on any comments until the next Harry Potter movie, then.
That's right. We won't let your wife listen to this either. That's
all right, good.
I don't judge you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All right, so what's next on your list there, sir?
And then we have District 9, which kind of looks like a, like...
Number 9?
Aliens intrigue kind of movie. It looks pretty good. It's presented by Peter Jackson, I think.
Who knows what that means?
It means he liked it, and so...
I'll present this, yeah, sure.
So that's one to watch for. It looks interesting. I mean, everyone can make great special effects nowadays. But is the story good enough? You know. So
yeah.
Hopefully, I
watched the trailer and I was like, "Oh, that could be awesome!" And then I had this moment where I'm like, "That's what I said about the new Terminator film." And so now I've rescinded my statement and I'm just going to remain completely neutral till I see it.
You know what? I'm totally off base here, but District 9, the trailer looks great. You guys should all watch it. D-9.com. But it reminds me of the movie Alien Nation from 1988. Did either of you guys see that?
Nah.
Yes.
Okay.
Not geeky enough, apparently.
I guess it's a geek movie, and I think it became a TV show, didn't it?
It did, yeah. For like a season or something.
Yeah, and I definitely watched it, and it was a deep movie, and it was about aliens coexisting with humans, and the kind of the undertone was a bit of a racial division thing, which it looks like District 9 definitely touches on. And talking about, you know, true racism where you're different, speciesism, I guess, is really the thing. But
no, you're correct. It's racism. We use the term racism incorrectly because there's only the human race.
Right. Okay, good. So Alien Nation, great old movie and decent one-season TV show. You guys should check it out. It's probably on Netflix streaming. Hey.
Probably.
And I'm going to go watch it right now. So that's good. And I don't want to talk about the other one because it's so possible, future, whatever. Like, any decent book that we like might be made into a movie. I think that's safe to say. And if that happens, they're going to cast Hayden Christensen as the lead. And if it's Neuromancer by William Gibson, I will kill myself. So I guess I accidentally talked about it. But whatever, let's move on. The last thing that we have to talk about is, I think it's really interacting on the internet and not being an idiot.
That's a good heading for it, I think.
So I'm going to tell the story, and then we'll get our different takes on it. And I know
this will be my first time. I have
Rev, you haven't heard it, so this will be. So basically, there's this online game that allows people to play together in a group. Actually, there are lots of games like that. So I could be talking about any of them, and you wouldn't know. And a gentleman named Michael Sacco works with a website that gives a lot of information about this game. It's actually one of the premier websites on the internet for this game. They have a podcast that I listen to every single week. Michael Sacco is on that podcast from time to time. And he's a great guy. He's a writer, and he provides good articles and good information. And he's really involved with the community, and he's just really down-to-earth and a good guy. So recently...
Wait, hold on. I think we can just talk about this in explicit terms because this is not a story about... World of Warcraft.
All right, fair enough.
In the sphere, so you can use all your proper nouns.
Do I have to?
Yeah, do it.
All right, fine. I'm not breaking a promise. I'm trying not to. We're not talking about World of Warcraft. It is just the milieu.
Ooh, good word. Vocabulary yeah. star for you, sir.
There you go. It's French, at least.
It is.
So Michael Sacco is a writer for WoW.com, which was formerly WoWinsider.com, and he is a player of World of Warcraft, and he used to work for Blizzard Entertainment. I don't think he does anymore, does he?
I think that is correct.
But he's still under NDA with them, so... I just said that because they say that on the podcast every time he's on. Doesn't matter. Totally irrelevant.
Does that get him street cred or something?
I think
yeah,
it does.
I'm still under NDA.
If you're under an NDA, you automatically get some cred. So
he's like under NDA from stuff from like 3 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. Good on you, Reb. Yeah, he can't talk about Kilthas at all. But anyway, back to Michael Sacco. So he was running, I believe it was a 5-man group. So he was in playing with 5 other players in WoW. They were running a dungeon on the Test Realm.
But
and
these were his peeps.
They were his friends. Yeah,
this
they
is
were.
Very important to the story. The one was his girlfriend slash, why I don't know if he's married or not, but his significant other.
Yes.
Another person in the group was Alex Zebart, who is also of WoW.com. He is the editor for WoW.com. So he's
and then there were two other people who would be included in a group with your girlfriend and almost your boss.
Right.
So close.
Literally
a close group.
So you're talking about people he knows very well, are very close friends with.
Right. So they're running an instance, and one of the guys is recording their run. So he's recording the video of the game, and I believe he's recording audio as well. And somebody dies, and Michael Sacco says, what did he say?
I can pull up the exact quote for you right now. Okay, so what the guy says is, this is what Sacco says. He says, quote, "I told you not to die, you blanking mongoloid."
And the internet exploded.
Well, at least their comments on the thread.
Okay, yeah, their comments. So somebody posted this up. The guy had recorded it. Somebody posted it. And everybody kind of freaked out on Sacco for being a big fat racist. And
yeah, like literally calling him out as a racist.
Right. So this is a huge topic.
It's like the anti-topic to me.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's hard for me. Like, I just want to turn off my laptop and turn off my phone. You know, I don't even want to be on the internet anymore. Like, these people have ruined the internet. But Jay, go ahead.
Yeah, well, the way I heard about it was I follow on Twitter Randy Deluxe, who is Randy Jordan of the Instance podcast.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, but he posted a tweet which says, "Over at WoW Insider, Michael Sacco appears to have posted videos in which he outs himself as a racist. Post the link," and then says, "I'm shocked." And I was like, what? So I went and I looked at it. I'm like, wait, you're going to say that he outs himself as a racist? Because he says, on a PTR, on vent, with 4 other people he is closely, like, very close with, says the word mongoloid. And you're going to call him a racist for that?
As a pejorative.
Yeah, well, no, it was a pejorative. But it clearly wasn't meant in the sense of, like, I am full of hate for this type of people, and I'm associating you with those people as a way of hating people. Like, that's not what he was saying. And,
well, but that begs another, and I'll play devil's advocate here.
Go ahead. Devil me.
I'm going to devil you up. If you use a term in the negative, and that obviously he was using that as a negative.
Sure.
If you use a term in the negative, and that term happens to define an entire race of people, you're essentially saying that being a part of that race is a negative, right?
To an extent, however, the term refers to, first of all, more than one of what we would call a race, which, as we mentioned previously, I do not consider a race because there's only the human race, and then there's people of different regional descents or ethnic descents, which is
right.
Different. But, I mean, you're talking about a ton of people, like multiple nations worth of people. Anyone, the term mongoloid can be referred to, when not used in the pejorative sense, to refer to anyone who is from, like, China to Eastern Russia all the way into Asia and certain Native American cultures, like... It basically, when you're using it as a pejorative, like what they're calling out is such a large group of people that it's almost a stupid thing to say. In fact, it's an incredibly stupid thing to say.
It would be like calling someone an American when you could be talking about someone from the United States or Canada or Mexico or Brazil.
Yeah. Like even worse. Basically, if you were to call someone an Anglo, like you're such a freaking Anglo man. Like that's
right.
I guess that could be offensive, but
not to anyone.
Yeah, so what my big thing about this is Sacco's dumb because he posted this video without saying, gee, this could offend someone. And it doesn't matter what it was. It could have been like, people from Idaho are dumb, which is a stupid thing to say because I know people from Idaho and they're not dumb. But the point is he could have said that, but what he should have done before posting a video has been like, oh crap, you know, 30 minutes into this video, well, it's a minute video, but whatever. Like 30 seconds into this video, I said that people from Idaho are dumb. Maybe I should edit that before I post the video. So shame on him for not doing that. But shame on every single stupid person on the internet who can't understand that a guy within a group of four people he's very close with cannot jokingly say something to make fun of his friend in jest in a way that is in bad taste and
right.
Anything other than a racist, which is just ridiculous because I don't know. I don't think I want to go into too much detail, but I would love to speak to the person who has never racial pejorative with a friend in good company.
Yeah, no kidding. This is just flame. It's huge, huge flame bait.
Yeah.
And the other thing is exactly what we talked about earlier, which is that it is not a phrase that has always been used to denote people of Mongol descent. In fact, I didn't know that definition, this is a funny thing. I didn't know that definition until I talked to a guy named, well, we'll call him PJ on the podcast, who is also a WoW player and a friend of our circle. And he kind of explained that to me. But before I heard that explanation from him, which totally makes sense, before I heard that explanation, I understood it as someone who was mentally retarded.
I thought it referred to somebody who had the intellect of a caveman. I thought that's what the joke was.
Right. And that is essential. That was common usage 25 years ago or so.
Yeah, but my wife didn't even know what that was. I was telling her about the story, and she's like, what's a mongoloid? Is that bad? Like, literally, if you talk to anyone under the age of, I don't know, us, anyone in their early 20s to teens, they would have no freaking concept of what you were saying.
So I'm guessing that, you know, it's much more consistent with the vein of his conversation that he was using it to say that the person was behaving retardedly.
Yeah, you were an idiot, basically.
Which maybe isn't a great thing to say, and maybe it is down on a subset of society that shouldn't be picked on, period, ever, under any circumstances. However,
so this is 2009.
However, it happens, and it doesn't make Sacco a big fat racist, and he said something stupid, and I think what we all need to take away from this, two things. One, anything that you say on the internet, everybody's going to find out about it, period.
Yes, true.
Period, 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 period. If you are connected to the internet and you say something, people are going to find out about it. And that's just how it goes. So accept that, come to live with it. And then the second thing is, people will develop a sense of righteousness whenever it suits them.
Yes. That's a good way of putting it.
That's very good.
So, I don't know. I don't think there's a whole lot to say. Sacco, we still like you.
He's also apologized, like, in the thread where he posted the video. Alex Zibart has come on and said that this wasn't meant as a way of, in any way, to be harmful. Like, full-on apologies.
I mean, who in this day and age is using racial slurs as actual racial slurs that, has an IQ higher of, like, 60? Like, and if I'm offending retards or bros, who cares? Yeah. But obviously he was using it as just, like, a frustrated, like, plea to his friend. Oh, you're a retard. And he used a slur that happened to be racial, but he wasn't using in that term, you know, so it's all just silliness.
Well, yeah, and just really quick, and this is the last thing I'll say on the matter, is in my personal opinion, the era where racism is an actual problem is almost completely over. And now it's I don't know. I don't know a single person in my sphere of influence or anyone I interact with on a daily or yearly basis who is genuinely racist. Like, you know, my mom talks about how her dad used to talk in very, very in terms that no one would use today, but that wasn't considered that racist. And I think that society as a whole is moving away from that. And I think that people might need to start kind of getting over their butthurtedness and realize that the majority of people who say stuff like this are not intending, they are A, not racist, and B, not intending to hurt anyone's feelings.
Agreed.
So last thing to say about that.
In summary, don't say stupid things. Just don't say stupid things, and don't say things that are mean. Two,
censor yourself better.
Yeah, censor, definitely. Two, don't be racist. Three, don't assume that everybody else is racist. Four, just don't be a jerk on the internet, people. Come on. What are you doing? Knock it off. Internet?
Out.
Chill. Sit back. Watch a movie. Peace, love, and whatever. All right. So that's kind of a heavy topic, and we could probably talk about it for a few hours, and we would probably... I think the three of us would probably take every single side on that conversation.
Yeah,
just true. Out of doing due diligence. And, you know, what it comes down to is I don't disagree with singling out anyone to be picked on for anything other than their own stupidity. So there's plenty of that to find and bug people for. So let's keep it within those bounds. People do enough stupid stuff to make fun of them for. I think that's pretty much it for this podcast, unless you guys have anything else you want to talk about.
Nope. Well, we're going to throw in Jay's review of the week in there somewhere when I review it.
Oh, yeah.
So
we don't have a bumper for that, so maybe we'll just slide it in here at the end.
I don't know. It's kind of silly. You're going to give me best for last, I guess.
You're saving the best for last. All right, so
last week was not good, so this week will be good.
Here comes, guys, Jay's review of the week. We're all going to listen to it right now, and he's going to do it live, and we're not going to add it in after the show or anything.
No, definitely not.
All right, here's Jay.
Hey, welcome to Jay's Weekly Review, where I, Jay, will give a review to you, the listener, of an item of note. Games, movies, music, books, anything is fair game. This week I'm going to do a quick review of a movie I saw this last week entitled Public Enemies. Here's the rundown. Public Enemies is a film set during the Great Depression that follows a group of thieves during the heyday of bank robberies. The main character in the story is John Dillinger, played by Johnny Depp. He is pursued by Melvin Purvis, a special agent of the FBI whose work in hunting down Pretty Boy Floyd, another famous bank robber, gained him a promotion from J. Edgar Hoover. Dillinger robs bank after bank, evading Purvis for a time and finding love along the way. As the era of bank robbers starts to subside and organized crime moves towards vice, Dillinger finds his mobster cover evaporating and the law hot on his trail. Now for the marks. I think all in all this movie was great. It could have done a bit better if it had played up on the opposite number angle, such as in other criminal cop films like American Gangster, where they did that really well. I think it added a lot to the story. As it turns out, in this film, the viewer is really in love with Dillinger, who is kind of the anti-hero the whole entire time. And you never once want for Agent Purvis or the FBI to win the day. So I think it's a little bit of a lost opportunity to get you to kind of go back and forth and side with each of them. But all in all, I still think it's a strong film. There's also this great love story that's kind of thrown into the mix. Some of the dialogue early on developing that was a bit choppy for my taste. I think it could have had a little bit better editing, but as it stands, I think the love story is really great. Marion Cotillard, or that's how you'd say it if it was French, and she's French, so that's probably it. The actress who plays Billie Frechette is great. She's just makes this really interesting persona, this character you really care for, and I thought that added a lot to the love story being actually viable inside of this crime film. There's so many good action scenes in this movie, car chases and heists and gunfights, and I've never wanted to own a Tommy gun so bad as when watching this movie. It was just great. I think, all in all, I'm going to give this movie 4 out of 5 stars. It's solid, has good characters, a nice story, it's got romance and action, and it's based in a great period of American history. It's just really interesting. If you're the kind of person who likes Transformers or those kind of summer blockbusters where things are just blowing up all the time, you might get a little bit bored at parts, but if you do like, movies that dialogue is important, you're going to enjoy this film quite a bit, and you'll also enjoy the action sequences. All right, so until next week, this has been Jay with Jay's Weekly Review.
Oh, that was a great review.
Thanks, guys. You're the best.
I enjoyed it thoroughly. That item of merit, which you have just reviewed, was exactly as you rated it.
Good. I'm glad you agree.
I do. All right, guys. Well, that's all we got for you this
week.
It's
all a sham.
Shut up. And we're really in a hot tub.
Yeah.
All right. That's way too inside. Well, that's all we got for you this week. Thanks very much for joining us again for Borked. Let me give you our contact information. You can find David Eagle on Twitter at www.twitter.com/CDEagle. You can find Jay on Twitter at www.twitter.com/Tesson, T-E-S-S-O-N. And you can find Rev on Twitter at twitter.com/revoked. You can email us at we@borkedproductions.com. And you can find the show notes at greyhats, G-R-E-Y, hats.com on the interwebs. Thanks for joining us for episode 5 of Borked. We'll talk to you next week.
Until then, stay nerdy.
Thank you very much. That's right.
Hackers break into UC Berkeley's database, steal nearly 100,000 SSNs.
Good lord. See, that's why I didn't go to college.
Is that considered racism?
By the players of World of Warcraft? Absolutely.
Apparently.
Dairy Queen, scream until daddy stops.
Wow.
I think they mean the car.